From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke yesterday released his initial findings on the Bears Ears National Monument. In April, President Trump ordered him to review some of the monuments in this country, and Bears Ears is the first. So it may give us a sense of the Trump administration's intentions for public land in the West. Mr. Zinke believes the land set aside for Bears Ears is too extensive to fall under the conditions of a national monument, so he's recommending the boundaries be scaled back significantly. He's also recommending Congress create an arrangement with Native American tribes to manage important cultural resources in the area and that wilderness designations be re-examined. So we're talking about the details of Zinke's report today, and we're raising the question, does he even have the legal authority to pull off the recommendations in his report? Join us after the news.
Hey there, podcast listener. I'm Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. If you enjoy the show, we'd appreciate it if you did us a little favor. Find us on the iTunes store and leave us a review. Let us know what you think. It's valuable feedback for us, and frankly, the more reviews we have, the more listeners we can attract. Thanks in advance. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Utah lawmakers and local leaders in rural Utah did not get exactly what they were hoping for in Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke's initial report on the Bears Ears National Monument, but they may have gotten enough for now. President Trump ordered Zinke to evaluate the designations of certain national monuments to make sure they lived up to the original objectives of the Antiquities Act, the method presidents have used to create monuments over the years, and over the years, particularly when Utah national monuments have been created by Democratic presidents, Utah political leaders have objected. Now, Zinke released his report yesterday. There are some significant and unique aspects of it, and we'll talk about some of that today. But the takeaway seems to be that Zinke is recommending the borders of Bears Ears National Monument be scaled back, not rescinded, as some Utah leaders had hoped, but pared down, and some say significantly pared down. So that's what we're talking about today. And you can join us if you have some questions. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. You can send emails to radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us first on the program is Brian Maffley. He's a reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. He's been covering public land and the environment, this issue in particular. And welcome back, Brian.
Yeah, good morning.
Judy Faze, of course, reporter with KUER News. She covers the environment, has been following this issue. And welcome back to you.
Good morning.
Any surprise,
oh,
Brian Maffley?
None at all.
None at all? What do you mean? That you didn't? Yeah. And I guess what I mean by that is, are you surprised he didn't just say, let's rescind it completely?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. When he made his trip here last month, he talked about how marvelous and sensitive these parts of these landscapes are that are in the Bears Ears. And clearly the Antiquities Act is designed to protect places like that. And but at the same time, he also strongly signaled that the monument is probably too big outside the scope of what he considers to be the limits of the Antiquities Act, which is confining your designations to the smallest size possible, you know, to protect for the proper care of these places you're trying to protect.
So this report sort of fits into what you sort of expected.
Very much. And he didn't give any acreages.
No, that was interesting.
Remember, this is an interim report.
Of course.
There'll be a final report, and then it'll be up to President Trump and Congress to implement what he recommended yesterday.
Judy, what was your initial reaction?
I'd agree with Brian largely. One point I think about why we're not seeing a rescission or a recommendation for a rescission versus scaling back is that there is precedent in the law and in the history of this law to shrink the boundaries. We've seen presidents do that. So there is a track record of that the future courts and the president can look at and say, oh, look, this is done before, so I can do this too. The one thing that I thought was kind of interesting, though, about that is I think, Brian, maybe you can remind me, on the visit, Interior Secretary only met with one archaeologist who was familiar with the area and then another one from a Port Group, a nonprofit who does archaeology. They're talking about, I've heard estimates upward of 200,000 sites within the original 1.9 million acre boundary. And I think part of the whole issue of the monument was we don't know what's there. And so for him to even make a recommendation on what sites should be protected in the next, you know, over the summer, for instance, is to me a big challenge.
But what do we even have a sense of what boundaries he has in mind? I mean, what he seemed to be suggesting was just a kind of vague idea that it's too big, but we'll work out the details later.
Well, his five-page order doesn't really mention any specific places, but in his talk with reporters yesterday, he did talk about the Bears Ears Buttes themselves. Yep. They rise to about 9,000 feet above sea elevation. You can see them from everywhere. You could probably cover those with a couple thousand acres, right? And then he talked about an area north of Newspaper Rock. Well, that's Indian Creek and the Dugout Ranch. And he also talked about where they have the densest concentration of archaeological sites. Well, the whole area, especially Cedar Mesa, is loaded. And as Judy pointed out, they haven't really been fully inventoried yet. So we don't really know what's there. But there are these obvious, iconic places like Moon House. He talked about House on Fire, but without mentioning it by name. He talked about this one hike he went on where there's just zero infrastructure, and we need this kind of infrastructure so the public can enjoy that spot. And so I clearly House on Fire is a place that he probably would want to have in the monument. Other than that, he said it's too premature to talk about acreage or boundary lines. So
who makes these decisions then? I mean, is it Zinke who says, that's beautiful, let's put that in there? I mean, who's going to be the person?
That's a good question.
Or the people at the table saying, this works, this doesn't. I mean, does he lay that out in this report?
Not at all. You know, and I wanted to ask that question in the press call. They didn't call on me. But that was that very question I wanted to ask. Let's talk about the places, because the Bears Ears isn't one place. The Bears Ears is hundreds of places. And, you know, this order that he issued it reflects one of two schools of thought about the Antiquities Act. One is that it should be narrowly focused on specific places, structures, historic buildings, objects of scientific interest, quote unquote. And those are, you know, a lot of those a lot of Antiquities Act designations, even by Barack Obama, have been small focus. Cesar Chavez's house, for example. But then there's this other school of thought that we're looking at entire landscapes that need to be preserved. And there's a long history of Antiquities Act designations that include landscape level designations going back to 1908 with the Grand Canyon. And that was Theodore Roosevelt, and that was done without the consent of the Arizona political leadership or local officials. It was highly controversial, and today we all agree that that was a good call. And maybe, you know, we could 100 years from now, we'd think, oh, the Bears Ears would be a great monument to be big. But right now, it's highly controversial. The people of San Juan County feel like it's been something imposed on them, and they're very resentful. Yeah.
What do you think? We're going to hear from Phil Lyman here in a moment, so we'll get a sense of what some local leaders might be thinking about all of that. But if you get a basic assessment for who wins, who loses, Judy, have you done that yet? I mean, who wins so far? Is this for local leaders?
I think we're like maybe in the fifth inning.
Yeah.
And really, to me, what we're talking about here is a public lands equivalent of repeal and replace. Essentially taking the parts of the public lands initiative that didn't get enacted, and essentially finding a vehicle for that. Because the other key elements of this process are looking at tribal co-management, which the Interior Secretary says he's going to expand to other national monument areas in this call yesterday.
Yeah. Can I just – let's talk about that for a moment. That seems like – if you were Native American, although I have to say the Intertribal Coalition is not crazy about the report, but that seems like you could say is a kind of a good thing. That the Interior Secretary is saying, you know, we have not in the past taken into account the concerns of Native Americans in terms of the way we manage certain lands. Yeah. Let's start doing that.
But it's already in the Bears Ears National Monument, number one, and it was hammered out with the tribes by the past administration. And under the PLI, if I remember correctly, they did have tribal co-management, but there was like one person from the tribes who had a seat, had a seat at the table, as opposed to a whole team of representing the tribes. So, and I think it's
and that one person was opposed to the idea of the monument, right?
I don't know if they had ever decided who was going to be on the table.
Only one seat.
But the point is that there was a weak voice for the tribes. They're also taking apart wilderness in some respects, or revisiting wilderness. That is such a loaded concept. And it goes back to the whole poison pill idea that a lot of the environmental groups complained about under the PLI.
And let's explain what we mean. What Zinke is recommending is that Congress, as he puts it, clarify the intent of the management practices related to wilderness.
Yeah.
Now, do we even know what that means? Just give us a sense of what he's talking about.
I wasn't sure what he was getting at. I think his point was about a third of what's in the monument now is either the wilderness area, Dark Canyon Wilderness, or wilderness study areas, about 427,000 acres. And what he was saying was, gee, here's a third of the monument that's already has more stringent management prescriptions than monument status would give you. So wouldn't we, by putting this in a monument, actually reduce the level of protection it has?
That is the point he makes.
The point he makes. And so he also seems to be suggesting the areas that he would include in the monument are outside of wilderness study areas. I'm not even sure what that.
Remember the whole thing in the PLI, Brian, about wilderness roads. Didn't that basically say, let's take 20,000 wilderness area roads and let's just call them good and we'll go ahead and let them be roads? Wasn't it something along those lines?
Yes, the PLI did have a provision.
Explain what you mean by PLI.
Oh, the Public Lands Initiative I'm sorry about the acronym, that Rob Bishop had proposed to resolve a lot of the land use conflicts in eastern Utah. And it included about 1.2, 1.3 million acres of national conservation areas of what basically now is the Bears Ears National Monument. That bill failed, and that's kind of what prompted President Obama to do what he did.
I think one other point that's really important, and Brian, you heard this in the call too yesterday, is I think that the really crucial issue in this is not that it's about Bears Ears, but it's about all monuments. And this really, I think the Interior Secretary said yesterday, we're going to look at this as a template for what we might do in other of the national monuments that are under review, and there are a total of 27 under review, including Bears Ears.
But can a president, this gets to the legal authority question, and I'm sure this is going to be a big one, can a current president retroactively go back and even make an assessment like this, even assign an interior secretary to make an assessment and then go do some trimming? Do they even have the legal authority to do that? Is that clear?
Well, I think a lot of legal scholars would say, it's clear that presidents do not have that authority. One of your guests will address that. But other lawyers go the other way. The Pacific Legal Foundation put out a report recently that, they have presidents have that executive authority. So it will be tested in the courts. There's no question. I mean, past actions by presidents to reduce monuments weren't tested in the courts because there was a national security component to those decisions, and they were supported by pretty much everybody. The most famous of that was the reduction of the Mount Olympus National Monument. So this will wind up in court some way or other, no matter what.
Well, and I think it's really fascinating that what this report does is it gives the president a very tiny part of a four-part plan and then puts the rest of the onus on Congress. Going back to my healthcare metaphor, I mean, Congress is having a very difficult time advancing anything. And I think from some of the environmental groups, they're looking at this and saying, we're terrified because we'll scale back the monument and there's no saying when there'll actually be a solution to these wilderness issues that's actually meaningful and that Congress can even pass.
I was wondering whether or not this idea of adding more layers of bureaucracy would be at all appealing to some conservative lawmakers.
It sounded more like a patchwork of bureaucracies. Like one of the things Secretary Zinke's asking Congress to do is to designate national conservation areas and special recreation areas on some of these lands within the current monument. In other words, this would be part of the repeal and replace. We repeal the Bears Ears National Monument, but some of it will be protected as national conservation areas. Pretty much whatever Congress think it is, or a recreation area. Obviously, a lot of it is wilderness study area already. And that was one of the complaints you heard from the San Juan County Commission is this is an area that's already covered with special protections. So why do we need another one? Well, I think having a national monument at least gives a kind of a coherent management structure over this entire landscape, which is so big, so varied, that it needs to have a kind of a overarching theme. And that won't happen under what Secretary Zinke's proposing.
Well, and again, the environmental groups, the county commissioners, they were the ones who set out a lot of the standards for the Public Lands Initiative that Congressman Bishop was forwarding. And they feel like they ought to have more control over that. And in some respects, I'm starting to hear people say, we really don't want anyone to come here. We just kind of want to go back to the way it was.
Yeah.
But that's not happening.
I don't think so. It sounds like visitation is up. And
there's no getting around the increase in visitation that's happening, especially at Cedar Mesa. And there just isn't the infrastructure to cope with what has been there in the past 10 years, and it's just getting more and more. The internet has made the broad awareness of this magical landscape available to everybody, and people want to see it.
Yeah. All right, final quick question, just to give us a sense of what happens next. Zinke says he thinks the president should not make a final decision until there's a review of all of the other ones complete in late August. So what's the timetable? Do we have a idea?
He was really, vague on that, but he wanted to complete this this fuller study.
So is he going to make the same kind of surgical recommendations for all of these other monuments as he's doing for Bears Ears?
I don't think he will, because that would just be a huge task. And during his visit here last month, he talked about how, some of these monuments aren't particularly controversial. Obviously, the Bears Ears is. Utah's Grand Staircase is. Basin and Range in Nevada is, really big designations that go from mountaintop to mountaintop. And those ones will probably see recommendations similar to what is unfolding for Bears Ears. Some of the others, I'm not sure. I think it's unless there is a great deal of local demand for these monuments to be reduced, they might stay the way they are. But the idea that you can just second guess, these presidents who designate these monuments in a 4-month period, it just seems unrealistic to me.
Judy, final word?
The White House and the Interior Department don't say we're going to have a decision by the end of August. They say by the end of the year. And it sounds as though Interior Secretary Zinke makes a recommendation to the president, who then decides. And who knows, maybe we could have a whole reality show sort of theme for the exploration of these lands.
Who gets voted off the
island? Yeah, really, really.
Okay. Judy Fays, reporter with KEWR. Thanks very much. And, of course, Brian Mathley of the Salt Lake Tribune. Thank you both. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KEWR. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been talking about the future of the Bears Ears National Monument. Yesterday, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke released an initial report where he proposed scaling back the borders of Bears Ears, but he also had some unique ideas for the land that includes the involvement of Congress and Native American tribes. So we're talking basically about the winners and losers here. Joining us now on the program is Charles Wilkinson. He's here to speak on behalf of the tribes. He's the Moses Lasky Professor of Law at Colorado Law School at UC Boulder, where he specializes in federal public land law and Indian law. He's served as a pro bono special advisor to the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition in its efforts to have the Bears Ears region declared a national monument. I should say we did reach out to the Native American tribes that make up this commission, and no member of the tribe was available. So, Professor Wilkinson, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Initial reaction. Just give me your basic sense of what you make of the initial report.
Well, they haven't, spent very much time on this. It's been a short period of time since they began a review, and the review has been very limited. I'd call it superficial. And so what one thing we're looking at here, and it influences the whole subject matter, is that the Obama administration worked hard on this, and they worked hard, and I imagine hundreds of different people in the administration did different work from different disciplines, and it took a long time to come up with a decision, and it was very carefully done. The proclamation's very carefully done. If the president decides to go ahead, as probably he will, with some kind of reduction, it's going to be based on a very different database because they haven't done much work and there isn't time for them to do much work. And so right at the beginning, because this matter will go to court,
yeah,
and the tribes have no, and conservation groups have no desire to go to court, but if they're going to damage this wonderful monument, then they have no choice. And so the matter will be fully litigated. The tribal attorneys, I'm one who's working on it, are experienced and will, I think, put forward a very strong case. And in fact, I started teaching public land law 42 years ago, and I was the only person in the country who was teaching national monument law, for example, at that time. And over that whole period of time, I'm sure this is the case with my colleagues around the country, just kind of automatically noticed the probable existing law, which was that a subsequent president has no authority with regard to existing monuments. And you just can't have these great lands set aside, reassessed and reassessed and reassessed. Congress can do it, but later presidents can't. And so this is a matter that there will be this report. There will be a report presumably in late August, and then it will go to the president, and the president will decide either to issue an executive order or not. But it will be immediately in court, and the real answer will come when the courts finally decide. And again, my expectation is that every indication is that the president does not have authority to act.
But did you get a sense that Zinke's, and I know it's just an initial report, did you get a sense that in some way Mr. Zinke was setting up a kind of legal framework that may be appealing to a conservative majority Supreme Court, for example?
This is a very superficial report that the secretary issued. I think that the court is more, I don't think the court is likely to be influenced by this. I think that the court is going to be interested or focusing on separation of powers. And this is a case where Congress has authority over the public lands under the Constitution, but can delegate power to the president. And I think the court's going to look very closely at that delegation, and we'll see that it's really a delegation only to the first president who makes the declaration, and future presidents can investigate it and report to Congress that something ought to be done. But their ability is extremely limited. I think that the courts might hold, because you see the Antiquities Act is very brief, and it says only that a president is authorized to create monuments. And it says nothing about eliminating monuments or modifying them. I think the courts probably would find that a later president has authority to issue very technical changes, where maybe there are clear errors on boundaries or boundaries are indistinct.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Right. Professor, we're running out of time, so I want to get to the question of the Native American concerns. Zinke does say in the report there are objects and there are areas that have cultural significance for Native Americans. He says tribal interests, in fact, have not been granted, and I'll quote him here, an adequate role in management of the monument, given the unique significance of those areas. So he's recommending this this kind of management collaboration. Now, how are tribal leaders reacting to that recommendation?
Well, it's very misleading. There is a clear structure set up in the proclamation for collaborative management between the tribes and the agencies. It's visionary. This is a great cultural landscape. It is a great cultural, conservation monument, and the tribal role is just critical, both because they brought forward this. This was the first time that tribes had ever brought forth a national monument proposal, and the tribes have worked hard on it and crafted it, and along with the administration. And so we have a presidential federal law, the proclamation, that creates a commission, a presidentially created commission. Five tribes are members of it, and they have very broad authority to engage in collaborative management with the agencies. And a key to that the proclamation mentions at considerable length is the traditional knowledge of tribes. And they have so much to offer, and this will be the first time that has ever been infused into the management of a public land unit anywhere in the United States.
Mm-hmm. That's Charles Wilkinson, a law professor specializing in public land in Indian Lot, Colorado Law School, joined us from his home in Boulder, Colorado. We'll be reaching out to you again, Professor. Thanks for taking the time this morning.
Thank you.
Joining us now on the program is Phil Lyman, who is the chairman of the San Juan County Commission, joining us from his office in Blanding, Utah. And Commissioner, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
I'm glad to be on the program. Thanks for inviting me.
So I know you've used the word encouraged to describe your reaction, but I also wonder, we'll talk about that, but I also wonder if you aren't just a little bit disappointed it wasn't rescinded, the monument. So how are you reacting?
Well, you know, it's hard to define a reaction in this situation. To me, the whole argument is upside down and inside out, and we're responding to, you know, these high-level legal, political, philosophical arguments on all sides, whereas for us locally, you know, this is where we live. This is where we raise our families. It's got our history. It's our jobs. And so it's hard to parlay that local experience into the debate that's happening on a national level that seems to have such a political background to it. So to say that I'm encouraged or discouraged, I'm kind of discouraged with the whole way that the decision making in Washington, D.C. takes place and how it affects local communities like mine.
But you are going to get, or you potentially could get, I shouldn't say you are going to get, you potentially could get a shrinking, a scaling back of the boundaries here. There could be an opportunity for more development opportunities on this land that had been protected or set aside. You must be encouraged at least by that.
Yeah, I didn't mean to come across pessimistic at all, because I'm very optimistic, and I'm very optimistic in the approach that Secretary Zinke has taken on this. You know, I take a little bit of issue with describing it as superficial, because it's the result of years of work on the local level, and we finally just have somebody that seems to be interested in listening to that local perspective. And yeah, I suspect that this monument is going to be altered, and in my perspective, much to the benefit of San Juan County.
I did want to get your take, Commissioner, on this idea, this recommendation from Zinke that the Congress go through and kind of modify the boundaries, but also designate certain areas within the boundaries that are, you know, national conservation areas, certain areas that are recreational areas. I mean, I wonder if you worry about the potential level of bureaucracy and patchwork that could come with such a recommendation.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned that patchwork before, and there's been a patchwork of protection, if you want to call it protection, you know, on that entire area so far. And, you know, ideally you would get something that applies some common sense to this, that we balance use and protection and do the things that make sense where they make sense. And I feel like President Obama's declaration was really broad stroke, really, really broad scale protection. And it didn't take into account, you know, all those areas that really don't have any of those resources that they're talking about. It just was a broad stroke.
What do you, how are you reacting to the recommendation of Secretary Zinke related to some co-management between, you know, public land managers and tribal interests? How are you reacting to that part of all of that?
Well, you know, we've always been in favor of local voices being represented in local decision making, and I hope that that's what this co-management ultimately works out to be, is local voices. You know, if we want to talk about who can claim sovereignty of this land, I think that's a great question to answer. I don't think it has been answered, and you get a lot of people that are claiming sovereignty that don't have sovereignty here. So to say that the tribes, you know, the five tribes are going to have a seat at the table on this, I guess that opens up the precedent for tribes anywhere, everywhere to claim sovereignty, have a seat at the table on any national monument. It's a little bit of a slippery slope in my mind. I'd like him to get back and find out what is the sovereign claim and who should have a seat at the table. And then absolutely, they should be there participating.
But you're saying that the people, the particular tribes who ought to have a say in this should be quote unquote local. And I guess the reaction that we've got, we've taken up that question before, particularly, for example, John Ruppel, who's a law professor at the University of Utah, is going to join us shortly. He and others, Wilkinson, who was with us before, have pointed out that it's not just the Native Americans who live in a county boundary whose opinion should matter, but that those boundaries don't really define the ancestral domain of a lot of these tribes. How do you respond to that?
I didn't say that the tribes that have a say should be local. I'm saying if they're claiming sovereignty, that should be based on actual, you know, history and not just a claim. If there's a tribe that is, you know, outside San Juan County that can legitimately say that this is their sovereign land, then they should have a seat at the table. Whereas someone who comes and says this is our sovereign land and they don't have anything that backs that up, in fact, everything that refutes that, it would be the wrong thing to validate that claim just out of some moral feeling of respecting Indian tribes. It should still come back to who can claim this as sovereign land. if it's the Hopis, then it'd be the Hopis. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's an important question. I don't think it's really been answered. But no, I'm not arguing that only people that live in San Juan County can claim this as sovereign land. I didn't say that at all.
Yeah. But it has been argued that that Native American tribes in the particular boundary are not for the monument designation.
Right. People who live close to it are not for it because it affects them more. And that's why, you know, that's why in this country we work on a basis of consent of the governed, and those that are affected by decisions should have their interests considered. And the whole idea that the decisions in Washington, D.C. are better than decisions made locally flies in the face of that notion and that logic.
Sounds like it's just too early for you to really say one way or another what you think about this. You're encouraged at this point, but it seems like your sense, and I'm guessing most everyone else agrees, that it's the devil will be in the details, and that's down the line a ways, I suppose. Is that how you're thinking about this?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess you could say that. I have a lot of confidence in the people that want to make this decision, and I have confidence in people in Washington, D.C. to make decisions that they have understanding about. The problem with this particular one, and as you pointed out on this show already, there's a lot of controversy around it, and it's not a decision that should be made, you know, based on politics, based on, you know, this lobbying of interest. You know, we've got a lot of really powerful external interests that are influencing this, and they try to make it appear that this is a Native American proposal, and try to commandeer and, you know, misappropriate the histories and everything else. And that's where the offense comes in at a local level. Let's just kind of enshrine the truth on this thing, and whatever decisions are made that are based on the facts and the truth, I think those will be the best decisions, you know. And I can't argue with the attorneys on the legal side. I can't argue with the politicians on the political side. But from a real level here in San Juan County, we know what this area is, we know what the history is, and we respect it, and we respect each other.
That's Phil Lyman, chairman of the San Juan County Commission, joined us from his office in Blanding. Commissioner, we're grateful. Thank you very much for taking that time.
Thanks, Doug.
We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West and Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, we have been talking about the future of the Bears Ears National Monument in light of an interim report released yesterday by Secretary of Interior Ryan Zinke. Joining us now on the program is John Ruppel. He's an associate professor of law at the Wallace Stegner Center for Land Resources and the Environment here at the University of Utah, where he works on public lands and water resource management. I should also mention he's also a board member of the Friends of Cedar Mesa. That's an environmental group in San Juan County that has advocated for the Bears Ears National Monument. And Professor, welcome back to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Doug. It's my pleasure.
Gosh, it just seems like we wanted to get a reaction to all of this. But as you look at it, at initial report, it's, as Professor Wilkinson said earlier, it's pretty basic and pretty short. It's pretty vague. It doesn't say acreage. It doesn't say a lot of things. Is it in some ways kind of too early to really say what the intent is going to be here of Brian Zinke?
As you say, it's an interim report. It was issued after 45 days of investigation. The secretary has reopened the comment period so people can go to regulations.gov and submit comments on Bears Ears and other national monuments until July 10th. And the secretary has until, I think it's August 24th, to release his final report, which presumably will have more specific recommendations. So at this point, you're right. We know conceptually that there are kind of four buckets of ideas that the secretary is exploring and that he thinks are worthy of further consideration.
In the report, this initial report, he does come to a conclusion about whether Bears Ears oversteps the intent of the Antiquities Act. He says, I find that the designation of the Bears Ears National Monument does not fully conform with the policies set forth in Section 1 of the order, which is to say the Antiquities Act. Or at least that the order that he was given by the president. Like the president said, go and find out if this conforms to the Antiquities Act. And what he's saying is, it's my conclusion so far, it doesn't. It goes beyond that.
I think we need to be a little careful there, Doug.
Okay.
What he said is that, in his opinion, the Bears Ears National Monument does not conform with the executive order. The executive order set up 7 criteria against which to consider the national monument. Only 2 of those are reflected in the Antiquities Act. So 5 of those are created out of thin air. So the fact that the national monument isn't consistent with President Trump's policy in no way should imply that it is inconsistent with federal law.
So do we know whether Zinke – I mean, I guess we can imply at least that Zinke does not think Bears Ears fits into the intent of the Antiquities Act, or is that going too far?
I think we need to be
careful.
Because
he doesn't say
He hasn't said that. What he seems to say is that he believes that the monument is too big and there are better ways to protect the resources of that area. It's less clear exactly what that would mean. Yeah. Based on his 4 recommendations, that would involve some mix of congressional action and at least the potential for the president to come in and adjust the boundary of that. But it's not clear. That's a possibility. The president may do that, or it may be turned over to Congress to try and answer those questions.
Does – and this is, I guess, the question, or one of them anyway. Does Ryan Zinke even have the legal authority to make a recommendation like that? He's presuming a kind of authority the current president just may not have.
I think he has the authority to conduct the investigation,
take a look,
to make a recommendation. Yeah. But it is absolutely clear he has no authority of his own to adjust the monument in any way. FLTMA, the Federal Land Policy Management Act, explicitly states that he has no authority to adjust or modify a national monument.
So what's the point of this then?
Well, the point is to tee up action either by Congress or by the president. It's to set forth what those options might be and encourage others to act. And again, you know, we'll wait until August 24th presumably to see what the final recommendations look like. Hopefully the president will wait until then as well. It wouldn't make sense for him to act before that. That would make this comment period and the full analysis it would undermine the whole purpose of that. But at that point, we'll have to wait and see whether the president chooses to act, what he chooses to do on his own, or whether he asks Congress to step in and potentially address some of these issues.
What's the legal justification for doing that, for asking Congress to be a part of this? Because that is part of the recommendation. He asks for the engagement of Congress. Does this get to a potential legal issue that, like the separation of powers, Congress has to be involved in a decision like this if you're going to start adjusting boundaries of national parks?
I think it goes back to the fundamental question of legal authority. Who has the authority to act under our constitutional system? And we start that by looking at the Constitution. The property clause is clear. Power over public lands is given solely and exclusively to Congress. The president does not have any inherent authority over public lands. So before the president gets to act, Congress has to delegate that authority. They did that in the Antiquities Act. They gave the president the authority to designate national monuments, but they did not expressly grant the power to revoke or rescind or undo those. So we get into this question of, does the president have that power? If so, where would it come from? I think what is clear is that Congress has the ability to adjust Bears Ears. They could amend the Antiquities Act writ large to address these broader questions of what is the appropriate role for local community input, what is the appropriate way to balance local economic issues versus national interests. So I think really the questions that are at the heart of this analysis and the heart of this concern over not just Bears Ears but national monuments in general are questions that are best left to Congress.
Can Congress retroactively pare down the boundaries of a national monument designated by Bill Clinton or Barack Obama?
I think the Constitution of the United States gives Congress the power to do that. If they wanted to eliminate a national monument, they could. If they wanted to trim back the boundaries, they could. If they wanted to change some of the management requirements, they could do that as well. Whether that is good policy or not, that's another question. And, you know, if Congress starts to go down that road, I suspect there will be a vigorous debate.
This may get you into the realm of offering political observations rather than just legal ones, but do you have a sense that there would be the kind of political will in the Congress right now, given the landscape, to do that kind of thing, for example?
My sense is that Congress would probably be reluctant to make whole-scale changes to the Antiquities Act. That I think outside of a fairly wonkish group of lawyers and people in the Intermountain West, people don't distinguish between national monuments and national parks. And I think most people look at parks and monuments and protected lands and they see them as valuable, important, and really special parts of our national heritage. They're a common treasure. And I think most members of Congress and I think the majority of the American people would be really reluctant to see us roll back protections for those special places.
What do you make of the recommendation by Secretary Zinke to do some co-management of land with Native Americans and land managers? What did you make of that, first of all?
You know, co-management's this term that's been thrown around on it. It's a really interesting concept. It goes back to this notion of the property clause. Congress has the ability to delegate power over management to other entities. The president doesn't. So President Obama went as far as he could in the proclamation in setting up a tribal advisory committee or tribal commission that would assist in management planning and would provide input into that planning process. Now, they don't have final decision-making authority. That commission, the final decision-making authority rests with the federal government. Yes, Congress could push further, and that seems to be part of the enticement that's included in this interim report. But if that comes at the expense of a significant protections that are provided for as a national monument, and it comes at the expense of the geographic area, and it's coming under the promise that, well, you give up those protections now and maybe sometime in the future we're going to give you true co-management authority. I think tribes have been down that road in the past of promising something better in the future for giving up concrete rights now, and I think they're going to be reluctant to go down that road.
One of the recommendations from Zinke is that Congress clarify the intent of the management practices of wilderness. What did you make of that?
I was a little puzzled by that because there is nothing illegal or unprecedented by having overlapping wilderness and national monuments. If we look at the National Park Service, there are, I believe, 50 National Park Service units that contain wilderness areas. If we look at lands that are managed for wilderness characteristics, so not just wilderness but other similar designations, it's something like 80% of our national parks are managed for those kinds of objectives. So clearly we can do that, and clearly there's a precedent for that. I think secondly, if we go back and we look at the PLI, the Public Lands Initiative, I found it fascinating that the PLI proposed to create wilderness out of Canyonlands National Park. So our own delegation seems to be implying that it's appropriate to have wilderness overlays on parks or national monuments, and it's appropriate to do it right there in San Juan County. And in the end, I think most importantly, the fact that there may be other and arguably even better ways to protect the landscape does not give one president the authority to substitute their judgment for that of another president. And that's just not our our system, and that goes beyond the narrowly prescribed powers that Congress gave to the president in the Antiquities Act.
So all of this conversation, at least at this point, is somewhat moot until we can settle that question of authority? Is that where we're headed?
Most likely. It really comes down to what President Trump chooses to do with these recommendations. If he decides that the questions that are surrounding national monuments are best left to Congress in order to get uniform direction and make sure that that direction applies equally moving forward across all national parks and all national monument units, I think that is less likely to result in litigation. I don't think there's any question that Congress has the power to do that. If the president decides to act unilaterally, I agree with Professor Wilkinson that there's almost no question that we will see litigation. There will be multiple lawsuits filed immediately. And yes, the question at the heart of this is one of authority. Does the president have the authority to revise or amend national monuments? And I just point out that 71 environmental and natural resources law professors from around the country submitted comments on the Bears Ears proposal, and we concluded uniformly across that group that we don't believe the president has that power. So it's not just me standing here saying I think this is a problem. I think this is the consensus of academics that have looked at this issue.
So we're years away from any sort of scaling back, redrawing. Is that fair to say, or is it too early to say even that? I mean, if you have to really get to the question of whether there is executive authority to do this, if in fact the president does go down that path where he decides to, as you say, make a unilateral decision here, that's a long time down the road, is it not?
It would be. If the president acts unilaterally to revise or rescind the national monument, like I say, we'll be in court for some period of time. If Congress chooses to try and amend the Antiquities Act either to make changes that apply across all national monuments or to specifically target one or more national monuments, that's going to have to go through the legislative process. That takes time. And right now, Congress is very busy with a number of other issues.
It's John Ruppel, Associate Professor of Law here at the University of Utah, board member of the Friends of Cedar Mesa, joined us in the studio. Professor, thanks.
Thank you.
Very much. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Technical direction today from Tim Slover. The program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.